Hey, sports fans, Coach Nick here, and welcome to B-Ball Breakdowns podcast. I'm very pleased to have Joe Goodman, who's the Miami Heat beat writer for the Miami Herald, to come on and talk to us a little bit about what's going on in South Beach with this season. So, Joe, thanks for coming on. I understand that you're having some issues with the weather right now, which is strange, I guess, because you're usually in Miami. What's happening?
Coach Nick, I am not in Miami right now. In Boston, flight was just canceled. Huge snowstorm right now, a foot of snow. So hopefully I'll get to Detroit tomorrow and catch up with the team for tomorrow night's game in Auburn Hills. But if that doesn't happen, who knows? I don't know. I'm pretty sure I'm going to make it, though.
Yeah, it's not that long of a flight, so hopefully they'll clear it out. And I think that Boston, compared to other places, is actually prepared for snow to some degree, right? So you'll be able to get out of there.
How do you know, man? You live in L.A.
Right. Well, I'm going to tell you, it's about 72 degrees and sunny and not a cloud in the sky. So I feel for you in some way. I remember growing up in Chicago that it was what that could be like, but, man, it's been a while.
Yeah, well.
So, anyhow, you know, and I suspect, like, you have a young one. I suppose, you know, they haven't seen snow yet, have they?
Oh, they're well adapted to snow, yes.
Okay, good. Well, mine aren't. So, and anyway, let's get into the Heat a little bit, because obviously it's been a really weird year compared to the last four. With can we say his name on this podcast, that who's not there anymore, or is he allowed to be spoken of?
I don't know, man. Go ahead, go right. For it.
LeBron James is not in Miami anymore. So you still have Dwayne Wade. You still have Chris Bosh. Let's go actually with the more exciting storyline these days, which is Hassan Whiteside. Where did this guy come from, and why hasn't he been doing this before?
He is like manna from heaven right now for the Heat. This kid has just had a huge breakout month in January. His numbers have been off the charts. He averaged a double-double in January, and he only played 23 minutes a game. He came from the D-League. You know, he dominated the Heat's D-League team, the Sioux Falls Skyforce, and then the Heat signed him the next day. Before that, he was in Lebanon and China twice, you know, and he's just one of these late bloomers that has figured it all out. And it's really, it's got to be the most remarkable story as far as breakout player from nowhere in the NBA since Jeremy Lin.
Have you had any interaction with him?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, he is full of confidence.
Oh, okay.
You know, and he's taking every advantage of this opportunity right now to you know, hopefully work himself into a major contract.
Yeah. So he's basically, what kind of contract does he have right now?
Well, right now he is signed for the next 2 years, but they have a player option after this season.
Okay. So, yeah, so he's in an interesting position here. I watched the game a little bit against the Bulls, and I know I tweeted out, just the guy was awesome. I mean, it seemed more forceful than when, like, Serge Ibaka blocked shots. He just seemed to be even more of a presence there. You know, has he talked about that? Like, where did he get that? Because I feel like this would have been something you don't need to develop as much. You would have had it right out of college. Yet, is this something that he kind of learned how to do, or is it just he's finally getting a chance?
No, I mean, he was a great shot blocker at Marshall. He had the most blocks in the NCAA there that season before he came out for the NBA draft. It's just coming all together for him right now at this point. He has those tools that you can't really teach, the quickness, the length, and his aggression is exactly what the Heat want right now.
You know, I've been looking at his offensive game because sometimes you might say, okay, he's coming from a D-League. He'll block shots. He'll grab rebounds. Probably can't catch real well. Probably doesn't run. But I got to say, you know, he's got a really great jump hook, right? I mean, this is something that, like, maybe, and perhaps it just took time to develop that. But from what I've seen, the touch has been fantastic. Like, he's getting bumped. He's finishing still. Is this something viable for them going forward?
Yeah, you better believe it. I mean, at this point, you know, they're designing the offense around him. And that's what happened on Sunday in the victory against the Celtics. You know, everyone knows the Heat's had struggles in third quarters this season. It's been pretty well documented. And they were struggling again in the third quarter against a Boston team that really didn't even want to be on the court, it seemed like. So Spoelstra started designing plays for Whiteside, which he had never done. Whiteside reeled off 10 straight points, including a ridiculous spin jumper off the glass, which, you know, even amazed Chris Bosh. So that's kind of been just another night, just another improvement by Hassan Whiteside that no one's seen yet. You know, it's kind of like, I guess, the only thing that the Heat can compare it to is the rookie season for Dwayne Wade. You know, Dwayne told me that, you know, every week he would improve, you know, leaps and bounds from the week before. And that's really what he's seen from Whiteside. And considering where he came from, it's shocking.
Wow. Well, I'll go through some numbers. I just kind of threw some stuff up here, like how the Heat started the season versus when he started to play. And you certainly see it in the, you know, the offensive rating has plummeted a little bit. It went from, you know, 103.5 before he got there to 97.7, which is not
great. By design.
What's that?
Right? By design, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I suppose you wouldn't want to see that much of a drop off. That said, the defensive rating went from 106.6 to 100.1. At 6 points a game, their net rating is still negative, but it's a lot shorter. And obviously, the rebounding numbers are just, you know, 20% rebounding offensively to 24%. And then, you know, the rebound percentage overall is 46% before he got there. Now it's 50, over 50. So, you know, you're seeing a really big effect there. I have to imagine, yeah, as they adjust more of these wins will start to come into play as well. And they'll be, you know, more firmly ensconced in that playoff race. You know, what is Chris Bosh?
The East playoff race. Yes, they're firmly ensconced. They couldn't go anywhere if they wanted to.
I guess not. I mean, listen, as of today, they're seventh. And, you know, they're a game ahead of the eighth place Charlotte, right? But then there's a little drop off there. So you're right. I don't think we're going to miss the playoffs here. But you know what? There's no reason why they couldn't move up a spot. But what do you think? Is there even a hope that they could get into the to have home court for the first round?
I don't know. I don't know about that. But I do know that it's probably easier for them to catch the Bucks than it would be to tank the rest of the season.
Do they want to catch the Bucks? Like, for instance, do they want to play Toronto or Washington?
I don't know if they're – I really don't know if they're looking at it that closely yet. They're just trying to tread water and keep their head above sea level at this point. But, you know, you're right. At some point, you got to start looking ahead. I think they're fine with whoever they play.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah. I mean, I would say that Washington would scare them a little bit more because of that. If Gortat and Nene are healthy, and then they got the backcourt. Although, you know, Toronto is tough. It's funny. The Eastern Conference.
Washington scares everybody.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, you know, what's funny. We can maybe we can talk about the Eastern Conference as a whole. You know, at the top, all of a sudden, there are some viable teams that you would say could probably do a little bit of damage in the West as well.
I think so. But then at the same time, you know, every sports writer I've talked to is like, I don't know about the Hawks, man. They could lose in the first round. I mean, I don't know who they could lose to in the first round at this point. But there's still some skepticism out there, I think, for these Eastern Conference front-running teams.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Hawks' record, though, against the West is really, really good. They've lost twice and they've won, you know, they're 13-2 against the West. So, you know, if they were like, you know, 5-1, I'd say, okay, we don't know. But, you know, 15 games is not a small sample size against the West. So I'm kind of sold on the Hawks. We've already done a couple of breakdowns on them. The Heat are next, actually. So I'm anxious to kind of really dive into some of that footage. Chris Bosh, it appears that he's posting up a little bit more this year than he has. Is that I'm assuming that's by design as well?
He started out that way, but now with Whiteside, he's kind of gone away from that. You know, he's had two terrible shooting nights back-to-back going into Detroit tomorrow. So, yeah, Bosh is kind of in a little bit of funk. Maybe he is adjusting to the emergence of Whiteside, you know, along with everybody. And that's kind of just been the MO of this team the entire season. There are so many moving parts. I mean, they started the season with a completely different style of basketball than where they're at now. Spoelstra had to completely scrap everything mid-season, and you know, they have Whiteside, and then they start to finally get used to what they're doing in the slowdown offense, and then Dwayne Wade goes down, and I mean, let's face it, Dwayne Wade is their best point guard.
What happened there? You know, there were moments when Chalmers was the best scorer they had in the finals, you know, 2 years ago, the first championship. I've seen Cole be a lockdown on-ball defender, you know, be able to make a play or two on offense. But it, what's going on? It doesn't quite compute, because I've seen them do much better than what's coming out of there now.
Total inconsistency. That's all. They just can't be consistent. They have great nights. You know, Mario Chalmers will have Super Mario nights, and then he'll have Wario nights, as they call them in Miami. As far as Cole, you know, I think maybe some of this trade talk has affected him these last couple weeks, because his confidence has plummeted. And, you know, he's the type of player that really needs confidence to excel in the NBA. Chalmers is the exact same way, but he has a little more experience in the league than Cole. I mean, at this point, they're starting Shabazz Napier, and every other phrase that comes out of Eric Spoelstra's mouth is talking about player development. So if that gives you any idea of where they're at this season, at this point in the season, then that should. And they have this kid Tyler Johnson now, who's on a 10-day contract. And, you know, in the last 2 days, Spoelstra has just given very strong statements and indications that this kid might be with the team for the rest of the season. Like, after the victory against Boston, he called him a two-way player. And then today he said he was the model of player development in the NBA. So,
what does that mean exactly, you think?
I think that means in the modern-day setup with the D-League and affiliations with the D-League, I think that means Tyler Johnson is the model of where they would like that to develop, you know, further. And so this is a kid that they signed. He was undrafted. They signed him for summer league. He played both summer leagues with the Heat. He went through the preseason training camp. He almost made the team. He got cut. Sioux Falls Skyforce signed him, so he stayed in the Heat's development system. And so basically he's been with Heat coaches since June or July.
Okay.
So yeah, that's what he means.
I like that. The notion that players can improve, it seems to be a little bit foreign. A lot of times when I talk to GMs, it's sort of like they evaluate on who the player is. I mean, I know they have to have a notion of them maybe improving, but it seems a little bit, I don't want to call it rare, because we do see evidence of guys improving year over year, but I don't think we've ever had an official organized system like this where people can actually rely on the D-League, for instance, to, you know, improve players like a farm system for baseball, right? It seems like a little bit of a new thing.
It's a paradigm shift, and the Heat has fully embraced that. Wow. You know, that's exactly what they want to have happen. And yesterday, Spoelstra even talked about maybe in the future having expanding NBA rosters, having two developmental slots for players that you can send back and forth. I think there's going to be, you know, in the next 5 years at least, there's going to be some new talk when the new CBA rolls around about how the D-League is going to impact the NBA. At first, that's way in the future talk, though, right now, because each team needs to have a one-on-one.
Right.
I think there are 12 teams that still don't have a one-on-one deal with a D-League team.
You know, what I think should happen is these one-and-done players, if they're not going to be able to play in the NBA out of high school, they should just be able to go to the D-League, get paid, develop. Because, let's face it, going to college and going to class is something that it just seems to be enough of a farce these days, where why bother? Why would they have to go and do that and waste the time and sort of create this notion of academics and student-athletes, right? It should simply be another level before you get to the NBA.
Oh, don't get me started on the hypocrisy of the NCAA, okay?
Okay.
That's an entirely different podcast.
All right. I'll write it down. We'll save it for the next one because, I mean, listen, I was a basketball manager, so I was like in a program in the athletic department. I got to sort of see and feel what was like. Not enough people, by the way, put enough emphasis on the notion of, you know, room and board and an education if they want to get that education. There's a value there, and I feel like the criticism comes in a way that the people don't put enough value on that. you know, if taken advantage of. But, you know, can you give us a two-sentence response to that before we go on to a rant?
Hold on a second. Pause the podcast.
Yeah, oh, that's okay. We can edit.
I'm staying over an extra night. My flight got canceled. Thanks.
All right. Live TV.
Room service. They were trying to kick me out of the hotel, but no.
Lock the door. Move your couch in front of the door.
Yeah, I don't need any room service or anything. Thanks. I'll take the water. Sure. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot.
I'll give you some towel.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. So yeah, so, is there a quick response? Like, if we kind of you know, pivot for a second.
I was completely distracted by what was happening.
Okay? I hear you. Well, here's what I said. I said that none of the people put enough value on a scholarship. There is, you know, an education, room and board. There's a significant value to that. Yet most people, when they're complaining about the NCAA, dismiss that, and that frustrates me. Having, you know, I've seen, you know, the players on scholarship. It's not like the greatest deal of them all, but it's a really it's significant.
Listen, kids. I think kids should be able to do what they want. If they want to forego their college experience to try to be a professional basketball player, I think they should have that chance. Yeah. There should be no restrictions. You have to go to school for a year. You have to do this. You have to do that. It should be completely up to the player.
Yeah, I agree. And so, and that's why I was thinking that, like, at the very least, if it had to be something like that, let it just be the D League. Because you can't tell me that, you know, LeBron James, you know, first year out of high school, if he was like in the D League, you would get people going to those games, right? You'd get a lot of interest. They'd actually, it'd be another revenue source for them. And then they'd have a chance to really develop and learn that system. I guess the real key is, do enough teams have a system in place that they could then pass down to a D League team to run and teach?
Not at the moment, but I think that the league is definitely trending in that direction. And the Heat is kind of a model for where the league, I think, is going to go in the future. As far as growing interest in the D League, I think if you expand the NBA draft to include contracts that would be run through the team, similar to what baseball does and hockey, then that would give fans an interest in those farm systems that's not in place right now.
Sure.
Like, for example, if the draft went 10 rounds and it populated all of the D-League teams similar to the minor league baseball or hockey, then that would create an organic interest in those leagues, I think, and benefit everybody.
Yeah. And by the way, what they could do is a doubleheader that before an NBA game, they can have a D-League play a game. You know, and they sort of, you know, why not? Like, they don't do that with
baseball. You're getting way ahead of everything right now, Coach Nick.
I'm sorry. I'm trying. Well, let's talk about Coach Spoelstra, because I'm kind of curious, covering the team from your perspective. Like, how forthcoming is he when you have to ask him questions and interview him? Does, you know, is he accepting of the media? Does he give you answers that are useful?
Spoelstra is very professional, okay? He has been – I've covered the Heat for 5 seasons, and I've never had a problem with him. Now, one of the most endearing traits of Heat coach Eric Spoelstra is something I like to call Spoisms. And, you know, that is when he comes up with these turn of phrase that kind of encapsulates his ideology and, you know, for example, circle the wagons. Yeah. You know, don't let go of the rope. These are all classic Spoisms. If you go on Twitter, hashtag Spoisms, Heat fans keep up with them, and it's definitely one of the things that people enjoy if you follow Eric Spoelstra's career. Yeah, but this guy has been great to work with. He's super professional. I think he's one of the top 5 coaches in the NBA, and I don't think you can really dispute that at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on exactly. I mean, we've been looking at a lot of the offense since when LeBron was there. We'd be charting offensive play calls, and I tended to scratch my head quite a bit over, like, what they would call, to the point where maybe it seemed like LeBron was controlling a little bit more of that than a coach was. You know, that some of their best sets they would run, they would never, they would run it once and then never run it again the rest of the game, you know? And I could never quite figure out how that worked. And so I was always wondering how, you know, it actually came up with the notion of LeBron James. What does LeBron James think of his, the role a coach is? Because it sounds like he's used to running the show. I certainly heard in Cleveland with Mike Brown that he was calling timeouts and he was subbing. That's what people were telling me from behind the bench. You know, and I'm kind of curious, having covered them through that era, did it feel like Spoelstra was...
You have to earn respect. As a coach, I feel like you have to earn respect of LeBron James. I don't think it's there initially, but at the same time, I think LeBron is very receptive and has an appreciation for talent. So at the beginning of LeBron's career with the Heat, there might have been some skepticism on his part with Coach Spoelstra, but you know, 20 games in, everything changed for the Heat. And it's taken a little longer, I guess, with the Cavaliers, but you know, I don't cover that team every day, but it seems like that relationship's gotten better.
I mean, yeah, they've been winning, and that always helps to either, you know, cover some things up. I mean, to me, there was a low point when he pushed Coach Blatt out of the way when Blatt was arguing.
Bumpgate part two.
I wish it was that, you know, because here's the thing. Most players would probably stand in front of the coach, kind of walk him away as they're sort of walking and pushing him away. But, like, you know, you don't just take two hands and just shove the guy out of the way. But, you know, what would be a good piece of advice? Let's just say we could have rewound to day one of Black getting hired. What would you have told him, having seen how LeBron interacted with Coach Spoelstra? That would have been a good piece of advice.
Your job is to land the plane. That is your job. Okay, yeah. That's what Spoelstra always used to say. He didn't try to overthink it. You have LeBron James on your team. In a lot of instances, he is the coach on the court. Okay, and his basketball IQ is off the charts. So you have to work with that guy and just land the plane. That's your job.
That's terrific advice. I think that could have helped a little bit. But then again, I think you were right. I think they're closer toward being on the good side than the bad side now. And who knows? I tweeted out 2 weeks ago before they went on this run saying there is an alternative universe where the Cleveland Cavaliers get to the NBA Finals. You know, you can never count the guy out.
Never bet against LeBron James.
That's... Right. You know, now that – so Dwayne Wade, he's kind of been in and out in the lineup. He's played, I think, in about almost three-quarters of the games, right? How has he looked to you? Has he been playing at like, peak Wade level or compared to, like, the last 4 years?
I think in the games that he's been healthy, Wade has been the team's best player. And he has helped this transition from what they started out at the beginning of the season to what they're trying to do now. With a slower half-court offense. And I think he's just has to stay healthy. That's the bottom line. And that's been the bottom line for the past 3 years with Dwayne Wade. He just needs to stay healthy.
Okay. So you think he married
into the same All-Star guy. He just keeps getting injured.
Yeah. No, and that is a consideration, certainly, when you're trying to evaluate. All-Star, you know, he I believe he did make the All-Star team, correct?
Yeah. He did.
All right.
He has to be there. He will be there. He's not going to play probably, but.
Oh, is that right? I might have missed that news. You don't think he's going to play in the All-Star game?
I don't know. I don't think he's going to play. That's not official news, but the way he's talking about his hamstring injury, he's not even with the team right now.
Okay. Right. Okay. Yeah.
But you know, players, unless your leg fell off, you have to be at the All-Star game to make appearances. So he's going to be in New York. He has to be there contractually for other endorsement situations anyway. So he'll be there. I don't think he's going to play. I think Dwayne's first game back is going to be February 20th at New York, Madison Square Garden. That'll give him 3 weeks off from his hamstring injury. So unfortunately, I definitely don't think he's going to play at Cleveland on the 11th. Mm-hmm. Which is going to be a big game.
Yeah, that's too bad. Now, talking about Napier, you know, what is your thoughts on him as he's progressed? It's kind of a strange – maybe people don't even realize exactly how he got to Miami. Fill us in on that story, like kind of like why he's there and then how he's been playing this year.
Well, there are two different versions of how he got there, as far as he is concerned. One is LeBron James, you know, very publicly said he was the best point guard in the draft, and the Heat went after him in an effort to woo LeBron back, you know, and re-sign with the Heat. The other version is that the Heat player personnel really liked the kid, and he met with Pat Riley. Pat Riley had a great impression of him, and they brought him in. Now, it's been rocky for Shabazz Napier so far with the Heat. Let's not pretend like it hasn't. They sent him down to the D League twice. They really challenged him to put in the work to be a point guard in the NBA. They feel like he wasn't putting in the amount of work that it takes to make that jump from college to the NBA. And, you know, to Shabazz's credit, he took that to heart, and I think he is definitely trending in the right direction. Now, I mean, he started two games in a row. He's starting point guard for the Miami Heat now, and he's going to start tomorrow against Detroit. Yeah. So that's Shabazz Napier.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I agreed with LeBron James in that tournament when I was watching. I don't get to watch a lot of college, but I watch the tournament as much as I can. And he was terrific. I mean, he was really aggressive. He could shoot. He could handle the ball. When you say that they thought he wasn't doing enough work, was there anything in particular, like his shooting or ball handling, or was that sort of an old general note?
I just think it was a rough transition for him going from the MVP or most – valuable, most outstanding player of the NCAA tournament to, you know, on the bench, trying to scrap by for minutes. And, you know, he probably needed an attitude adjustment. I think that is okay. The best way, the most, you know, honest evaluation of the situation at the time. But like I said, now, they sent him down to the D League a couple times and you know, let him know his place, I guess, and he's turned it around.
How have Cole and Chalmers taken him starting?
I don't think Cole's happy about it at all. You know, Cole came into this season in a contract year in the best shape of arguably anyone in the NBA. I mean, the guy's in incredible shape, physical fitness-wise. Mm-hmm. And he... If you remember, you might not remember, but Mario Chalmers started the year as the starter, but that was only after a couple games in the preseason. They put Cole in, and they were going to go ahead with Cole as a starting point guard, and it just hasn't worked out. You know, that guy, LeBron James, was the team's de facto point guard, and really they haven't been able to replace that element of LeBron. I mean, you're not going to find... obviously, another LeBron James, but you can piece together different things from different skill sets and kind of come up with a point guard, and they haven't been able to do that yet.
Mm-hmm. Now, talk about Luol Deng, how he's fit in. You know, he's actually – I wonder if he feels like he's on vacation because he only plays 32 minutes a game compared to what it was like in Chicago. How does he – do the guys get along with him? Does he fit in nicely?
Luol Deng is the type of player that needs a very solid and consistent point guard to be at the maximum level of effectiveness. And, you know, as far as off-the-ball cuts and movements, and it's taken him a while to kind of integrate himself into the Heat system. Right now he has a strained calf, so he's not even playing. That's what's going on with Luol Deng right now.
Okay, yeah, because it looks like he's played most of the games in the first half of the season. So, you know, I think he's probably doing exactly what they were kind of hoping, right? Sort of 14.3 points, you know, five boards, a couple assists. He's actually shooting very nicely too, 50% from the field. So
I think it's his best shooting season of his career, actually.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm not the biggest fan of his offensively. I feel like he's a bit limited as a shooter, as a ball handler, certainly as a slasher. And I totally get it why you would need someone who could see the floor well to set him up for those cuts. And Lord knows, even playing in pickup, I'm sure you know, when you cut like six, seven times in a row and you're wide open and they never get you the ball, it can get frustrating at times. So
I'm so familiar with that in all my pickup games. That's exactly. If you watch early season film of Duel Dang, he was open like all the time. Mm-hmm. It just never got him the ball. And you know, he's found his spots lately, but now he's hurt. So
yeah. So what is
just another setback for the Heat?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. So what is happening? Is this an epidemic here, or are these just sort of isolated incidences where guys are just sort of getting hurt, or what?
Man, it's been all of the luck and all of the karma and positive vibes that the Heat had for 4 years. You know, they really only had injuries to Mike Miller and Udonis Haslem. Those were the only major injuries, if you want to even call them that. It's all caught up to him this season. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you start out the year without Josh McRoberts, and then he comes back, and the team looks like they're finding a rhythm and a chemistry, and McRoberts goes down for the season, and then, you know, Bosch goes out with a calf strain, and then Wade goes out with a hamstring, and then Wade goes out with another hamstring. Luol Deng's out. Yeah, they can't catch a break.
Right. Well, and that, you know, you kind of left out Wade's injuries.
Although, I think... At this point, I think, you know, as far as the way this season has gone, and they would trade all of that for this one kid, Whiteside, that they found, you know, which would they have this kid? Would they have this kid right now if they went through the entire first part of the season without any injuries? No, they wouldn't.
Right.
That's probably the bottom line.
It's a wonderful life.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a good argument. That's a good discussion, you know. Would the Heat trade all of the injuries and roster upheaval that they've had so far for this kid, Hassan Whiteside? And I think maybe they would.
That's interesting. So let's just pretend, like, you know, if you want to make lemonade here, they now have Whiteside. And let's just say, you know, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, they all stay healthy and they play, you know, most of the games that are left in the season. Whiteside is a double-double machine. You know, I don't know what are there numbers they actually project. They assume like, oh, he'll probably get like 12 and 10 a game. Do they talk about it in those kind of ways?
Yeah, they expect a double-double out of him now in every game. So, that's what Chris Bosh says. He rolls out of bed and gets a double-double.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I can't – I rarely do I, like – you know, I was watching the games. I think it was a Sunday game, right, Bulls and Heat. I'm kind of half watching it, I guess. And then all of a sudden, like, I just keep seeing this – you know, these plays made, you know. And it rarely does it really attract my attention so far. And I know
weak side blocks.
Yeah. Putbacks. Yeah, right, because he made – I think he blocked Pau Gasol, right? Didn't he have a block that was insane or something crazy? Or maybe – well, Pau Gasol
came
out of nowhere.
Lot.
What's that?
Came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Blocked him.
So, okay, so you're going to get your double-double out of him. You're going to get your, you know, 20 and whatever, 8 from Bosch, I guess, these days. What's he doing on there? Yeah, 20 and 7, 20 and 8. You're going to get your 21 and, you know, 5 assists out of Wade. You know – what do you think? I mean, are these guys going to be – how far do you think they're going to go?
First round.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, even that's the best-case scenario. You know, I think this is a – I'm telling you, I think they're going to chalk this year up to player development at this point.
Yeah. You know what? You know. And that's okay. The problem is, you know, obviously Dwayne Wade, they're all going to be back again. They signed – they have – how many more years do Bosch and Wade have?
Bosch has a 5-year guaranteed contract.
Oh,
Wade is on a 2-year deal.
Okay, so you know, so you think that they're kind of player development, take their lumps a little bit, use it as for really good experience for guys like Whiteside and the other younger guys. So you think that maybe this year will sort of be that, and then next year they might be able to take a shot at something,
or maybe the year after that.
Okay, now so you think that will Wade even be around then?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so he's going to play this year, next year, and you think another year after that?
And then he'll re-sign. He'll try. I mean, he's going to try to play as long as he can.
Yeah, all right. Only because – so, okay, because to me it looked like that. I think it's probably part of the reason why LeBron left was that, you know, Wade was simply not going to be the guy he was. And if he could recreate a little bit of that, it was only going to be for very short stretches with, you know, games in between. Does it feel to you like this year has proven that wrong?
No. No, I think LeBron made the right decision. Ultimately, I think he made the right decision. Now, if you throw Hassan Whiteside into the mix, you know, that's a guy that the Heat just never had during LeBron's years, but that's all hypothetical. Yeah. LeBron made the right decision. Wade, you know, he can't stay healthy. And, you know, he did. He took less money in the offseason in the hopes of getting LeBron James back, and that didn't work out. So, you know, in the next 2 years, the big question, I guess, is going to be, how much Dwayne Wade is going to demand in another contract. I don't know if he's going to go at that point on similar one-year deals that LeBron is doing, or if he's going to try to get, you know, 3 more years out of it. I don't know. But with the new salary cap bump and this new kid Whiteside, you know, unless they package a trade in the offseason with a lot of parts in Whiteside, because, you know, you potentially could get a pretty good piece, mm-hmm. You know, for not a lot if Whiteside, you know, continues to develop.
Sure.
But we'll see.
I think that the worry has to be that they get stuck in that mediocre range where they're always, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. They can't get a high draft pick. They're on the road in the first round. It's tough to win those. And that, you know, that could get you in purgatory for a while.
Well, I don't think the Heat – I think they're looking ahead to 2016. That's the ultimate goal, to bring in a big-name free agent and build a team around whoever that is and Bosch and maybe Whiteside. The fans are totally sold on Whiteside right now, but I'm not completely buying in.
Sure. Well, I wouldn't either. You know, he's got to give me, you know, what, 30, 35 games of consistent play before I'm really sold. But that said, again, in this, you can't fake that, you know, jump hooks with touch, right? You either have it or you don't. What are they saying about about their defense? Because it's 20th right now in defensive rating.
That's great. That's great compared to where they started the year.
Okay. So,
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, last night Spoelstra said that he called last night, he called Sunday's win against Boston one of their top five rated defensive games of the season, I guess. So he liked the energy out of the young guys against the Celtics. If you look at the statistics from October to December 31st, they were horrific. You know, I think I even wrote them down.
Hey.
Right here. Yeah, so they were averaging 98.1 points opponents per game up until December 31st. And then Whiteside starts getting consistent minutes, and it drops all the way down to 90.7. So, you know, that's 8 points per game difference. Teams were shooting 47% from the field against the Heat through December 31st. And once Whiteside started to become a regular rotational player, that dropped all the way down to 41.6%. So that's a big jump for a defense that kind of had to make some tough decisions in the middle of the year.
Absolutely. I'm kind of curious. Do you know what their record was in January?
I'm going to tell you right now.
I'm looking it up because I feel like, yeah, I'm curious because that certainly is. Let's just see. I like those numbers. I like the fact that defense is better. I want to be able to make sure that it translates into wins.
I don't think so.
Let me see here. I'll tell you right now. Looks like they have 13 games in from January 1st to January 31st of this year, and they went 6-7. We'll see.
Okay. Well, how about you look from when when Whiteside started.
Yeah. All right. So I have it from the 23rd
from the Clippers.
Till now.
From the win against the Clippers.
Oh, well, I can do it from the 23rd of December when he really started getting playing time. But now you're asking too much sliding, too much stuff on my advanced stats. You know, so 8-11, which is probably like, you know, sort of roughly where they are overall anyway. I mean, what are they are.
But
21,
what do you need
26.
To be in the East to make the playoffs? What do you need? I mean, that's.
Oh.
That's fine.
Yeah, no, I would look at, you know, for them to really want to, yeah, you're right, to get past the first round, they're going to need home court advantage. They're not making up 8 games, you know, in 40 games left. So it's an interesting thing. I feel like I wonder if all the fans are aware, as you are, that, like, maybe this is sort of the development year. Does that, you know, is the attendance even worse than it had been in the past? I certainly see when you see the games around the bowl, they're always late arriving in Miami, right? But I feel like even
what do you mean worse than the past? They've sold out like every game.
Okay, so what I mean by that is, I mean, I guess part of it's the late arrival thing, which is just so weird to me. But you know, there's so many seats available you can see in the through the first like quarter. But they've sold out, fair enough, in those tickets. What's happening this year as far as attendance?
Attendance has been sellouts every single night. Now, so it's an interesting dynamic in Miami. The rich lower bowl seats, you know, they have fans that show up at halftime. They stay inside the clubs. The upper bowls are sold out for every game. So it's not like there's any lack of enthusiasm for this team. Okay. I think a lot of that has been media-driven narratives and,
Good.
You know,
shine some light into that because, you know, you'll hear a guy like Bill Simmons talk about it, how nobody shows up. It's really quiet.
It's simply not true. If you go to a game and sit there, the arena is full.
Mm-hmm. And it's
by
loud.
The second half.
And it's loud. They're cheering. They're cheering on their fans. It's still home court advantage for the Heat, right?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But you know, if you look at the record, the home court is they've been terrible at
right.
home.
Well,
which is a whole other story.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's for lack of support from their fans.
Ah, okay. Well, it'll be interesting to see how to trace this and see how well they improve again with Whiteside, because certainly, you know, yeah, it's one thing to find a guard who will play well like DJ Augustine. He shows up for the Bulls or he shows up for the Pistons. He does well.
Right.
But it's another thing, yeah, when you can find a big man that can do what he's doing, that's a real special thing. So just, you know, kind of a remarkable story. We're going to do a breakdown very soon on the Heat, but focused on Whiteside because I want to get through some more footage of him too. So, you know, I can't wait to see because you're right. It could be interesting here because in theory, right, I still feel like there is this weird alternative universe where Wade, you know, puts on his cape, Bosh is Bosh, and no one wants to play him in the playoffs.
I think you're right. That could happen. That's very, you know, glass half full, I think, at this point. But the pieces are there for them to upset somebody, maybe, or at least take a series to seven games in the first round.
Wow.
But, you know, you have to find chemistry going into the playoffs. You can't just have all these moving parts all over the place. And then finally have this team put together and expect to reel off a bunch of wins in a row in the playoffs. You need to have that momentum going into the postseason. Healthy players, building defensive chemistry. I don't want to start sounding like Eric Spoelstra, but, you know, it's real. You're a coach, you know.
Yeah, well, I think it's also – it's Riley, right? Those are all sort of the Riley-isms from the 80s that he's reconfigured a little bit for his own use, right?
If you say so, man.
All right, we won't talk about him. So anyway, well, this is going to be really exciting. I'm going to keep my eye on this. I do think it's worth watching because, you know, there are some teams up there that really aren't quite tested as much as the Heat have been. And, you know, it's not like the Spurs where people will forget about them and next thing you know, they're in the conference finals. But, you know, you can't overlook how many of those players that are still there that have finals and championship experience. And, you know, we've seen it happen before where champions or former champions, like they lull through the season, right? And when it finally kicks off and, you know, that's a whole different atmosphere. I mean, you could probably even measure the atmosphere and how different it is in the playoffs from your perspective, right? Just the way the air is thicker or something, right? Isn't there a way that you can almost measure it?
Oh, absolutely. And the Heat's been breathing that thick air for 4 years now. So, no, you're right. They're definitely a battle-tested postseason team. They have played in every single game for the past 4 years. So that's going to help.
Yeah, we'll see.
That's a positive in their favor.
Right. So it's weird. I have no idea why I'm being glass half full on the Heat right now. It's never really been that way for years, but I always like the underdog. So all of a sudden, they're kind of like an underdog here, and it would be exciting to see. So we will find out. And, you know, don't forget, everybody, if you want to read Joseph, or certainly follow him on Twitter, because he's always got the latest updates on what's happening with the Heat. So you'll have his name on the bottom to follow him on Twitter and also at the Miami Herald. And Joe, thanks for coming on the show. And definitely we'll have to check back in with you before the playoffs start.
Please do. Thank you.
You got it. And don't forget, sports fans, at B-Ball Breakdown, we're not a channel. We're a conversation. You in? You in, Joe?
I'm totally in, man. I'm down.